It's the TEH Podcast, episode number 263, with Leo Notenboom of AskLeo.com and Gary Rosenzweig of MacMost.com. This week, Apple's cheapest MacBook ever. When AI makes friends with AI, tech bubble insights.
So, Gary, were you right?
Well, yeah. Left
last week's episode, you were making some predictions or possibilities for what was going to happen the next day.
I mean, we both talked about the fact that it seemed unlikely that Apple would choose the name MacBook Neo and not just call it a MacBook. But they did, in fact, yes, call it the MacBook Neo. And so far it seems to be really working for them. Like, nobody's complaining about it. Everybody's kind of grasping onto like the name, and it's got a pretty positive response for lots of reasons. But yeah, I think it's one of these little maybe genius marketing things from Apple, that it's really going to it's going to help this thing catch on.
Is it any good? I mean, besides
yeah.
the name.
Well, so it is fascinating. Actually, I've gone on a little bit of a journey myself in the last week, just dealing with the news and all of that, because the news came out. Okay, let's take a look at what this MacBook Neo is. It is very low priced. Matter of fact, there's never been anything close to this in the MacBook line. The closest was that for a short time, they had an M1 MacBook Air for $799.
This one is $599?
$599.
Yeah.
So that was for a short time in 2020, basically. It was a very meager machine, you know. And even before that, if you want to go back to, like, they had a basically cheaply priced MacBook model, you know, 15 years ago. That was like meant for the same kind of thing. Like, here's the cheap MacBook. It's made of plastic. You know, it's got basic features. That thing was $1099 when it first came out, and they dropped it eventually to $999. So this is like a whole new level down from that. Like, really trying to, like, because this really hits in the middle of like iPad and tablet territory. Like, you can get an iPad cheaper, but if you want the iPad with the keyboard, you know, you're spending more than this, you know, right away.
So what processor's on the inside?
So on the inside, what makes it all possible is the A18 Pro processor. And that is the processor that's in the iPhone 16 Pro.
Interesting.
So no news to anybody that it can be a Mac, because the very first developer Mac for Apple's processors before they had the processor ready, the developer processor was an iPhone processor, much like this one.
Huh.
So we already knew that, you know, macOS had been coded to go across kind of the line of processors that Apple was producing, but they only came out with Macs that are the M level processors. So here they are coming out with one with the A processor, which does a few things. First, it's smaller. It's smaller than any M processor, but not by that much. But the other thing it does, because I was really trying to find out, like, why do they do this? The thing that's really big is energy consumption. This thing consumes about a quarter of the energy of the, like, the lowest energy consuming Mac processor, because it's meant to go into an iPhone. And just doing that opened up the window to a whole bunch of stuff as I continue to investigate. And so, like, if you're consuming less energy, then you don't need as big a battery. So you can cut back on the battery. Batteries are expensive. Yep. So suddenly they could go and say, well, we're going to put less battery in there. And it is a smaller battery. But because the processor is so power efficient, it will still last for 11 hours.
Yep.
Right? Now the battery is smaller and the processor uses less power. We don't need to have this chunky big, you know, adapter. This thing could run off a phone adapter. And it does. They give you a 20 watt, the exact same adapter that you get with the iPhone and iPad.
Interesting.
So it's running off a phone adapter. They also went and said, you know, we have this whole rapid charging thing. Forget that. We're not putting all that stuff in here because it's got small battery anyway, and it's energy efficient anyway. So we don't need all of that. They went further and they said, well, we're going to take out the backlight for the keyboard. We're going to take out the light sensor because we don't need the light sensor if you don't have a backlight. but it is used for screens, some screen stuff, but the main thing was for the backlight. So we'll take the backlight sense the backlight light, the sensor, all that away. Like it starts like cascading what you could take away from this to bring the price down, and you could see where they got the price down and turn this into a really interesting model that it's low enough, you know, that it's cheap. Educational pricing is $100 cheaper. So the base price for education is $499. And they're also simplifying it in that there's only two models. There are no other options. You get the $499 or the $599 or the $699 model. And
And
the
the difference?
only difference is one has double the storage and touch ID. So a button, a fingerprint ID button. The only difference, they both come with 8 gigs of RAM, and then one comes with 256 gigs storage, the other 512, making the 699 one the winner. Like if you just want a laptop, and but you don't need anything special, you know, like the other Macs are just too high end for you, and you just want, well, you know, what it'll do for me. The 699 model is great. If it's an educational kind of thing, where it's like, oh, this is being used by a kid, or this is being used in a classroom where other children will come and use it every day, you know, then you don't really need Touch ID. People aren't storing media libraries on it. Then suddenly the cheaper model becomes attractive. But for most people, it's the $699 or $599 for education pricing, Neo. They do a bunch of other things, like because there's no backlight on the keyboard, suddenly it frees them up to do to make the keyboard different for every model. So the actual colors you get, there's four different colors. The keys are actually those colors. And
Oh,
Apple's never
cool.
done that before. They've just been like, you know, oh, you got a blue MacBook. Well, it's going to be black keys still, you know. So the keys are different colors. It's still an aluminum chassis, so
I was going to ask.
it's not plastic. It's aluminum, so this thing's probably going to feel really good. And what I'm hearing from a lot of people is a lot of people are going to be getting their first Mac. It's going to be this one. A lot of people have been moving along with an iPad or a tablet or whatever, and they feel that it's like, maybe I should be moving to a computer at some point. This is the one they're going to get.
Interesting.
And I think it's going to sell a lot. And I think there's going to, and it occurred to me within like 10 minutes of this thing coming out that I think a lot of people are going to be buying this as their first Mac, and I need to get one, and I need to start doing videos that are specific to this model. So yeah, the
Welcome to
obvious,
Mac videos.
yeah, the well, the obvious stuff at first, like how can you edit video in iMovie with this? Like how, you know, the answering the naysayers. Oh, you can't possibly edit video on this. Oh, you can't possibly. How big of an image can you open up? How big of a spreadsheet can you deal with? So, and I know that basically the A18 Pro processor has a very powerful, like regular single core. It actually is like two full power cores in it. So for doing one core tasks, like a lot of things that normal people do, just like interface stuff, you know, this is going to be as fast as an M4 Mac from last year. Like you're going to see great performance from that. When you go to multiple cores, that's when it's going to definitely seem like it's a Mac from, say, 2020. But even then, that's not that bad. So I really want to come out with like videos that show what the Neo can do. Then I want to come out with videos that are specific to like using the Neo for this, using the Neo for that, for the things that the users that have bought it really want to do with it. So yeah, so I grabbed one, so it should arrive tomorrow, as well as the first ones coming out.
And
And
which
then I
one
could
did you go
actually,
for? The big one?
yeah, well, yeah, I went for the bigger one because yeah, the storage, it's like it's still got the same amount of memory in it and all of that. It's not going to make any, the Touch ID isn't going to change the performance, but I do want to be able to bring it out into the wild and like use it maybe possibly as my regular laptop, replacing my M2 MacBook Air. So I want a Touch ID, but also because I'm going to be doing things on it, like trying to show how you can edit video and all that, I am going to be using up space on the thing. So I got the bigger one. I was tempted to get the smaller one just to be like, this is the low end one and look what it can do. But I don't really see anything difference in performance unless you fill the drive to the brim. Then you'll see a hit in performance. But yeah, and the blue one, the indigo one, I guess, is the one. It's just because you have to choose a color. So it's interesting. I can't wait to get it and see what it's like. Can't wait to start to do videos on it, and really, and I have a good feeling like this is going to expand the number of Mac users by a lot, and especially first-time Mac users. A
Sure.
lot of people that have had PCs and have just been, they have still have their PC from college or whatever, but they have an iPhone. They moved to an iPhone a long time ago, are going to be like, oh, this is my chance to jump to a MacBook
Well,
and
I
retire
can
my
tell
PC.
you that, especially over on the YouTube channel, where I'm talking about various issues with Windows and OneDrive and all that kind of stuff. There's a huge crowd of people that are saying, well, you solve this by switching to Linux. Well, yeah, but this seems like another good escape route for people that are frustrated with Microsoft and Windows 11.
And and what I can't, I've had to answer this question a bunch of times, which is really telling. People asking me, saying, I've got an iPad now, so how is this different? Which is really interesting because the way it's different is it runs Mac OS and Mac software. And that's like really important. Like there's when you're using a tablet, even though the iPad OS system has gotten a lot better and having Windows that you can move around and stuff like that, it's still you don't have terminal, you don't have developer tools. There's all these apps that are just not available on the iPad, all these things that you can't do. You can't drop down into terminal and type in Linux, you can't. There's a lot where you just need a computer. Like you don't need a fancy computer. But you do need to make the leap to a computer, which is really interesting because Apple's strategy for a while really looked like, okay, Macs are going to be our high-end computing device. We've got our mobile device, it's the iPhone, and for low-end, it's an iPad. Like we want everybody to get an iPad. That's the future. Normal people have iPads. If you create content, if you do like technical work of any kind, then you're going to have a Mac. But now the MacBook Neo looks like them basically saying that's not happening. And it hasn't, to be sure. It should have happened years ago if it was going to happen. But people kept buying Macs and people, and the same thing on the Windows side, people kept buying laptops and desktops and all that. It didn't, everybody didn't go to tablets. And the MacBook Neo is Apple saying, okay, we're not seeing that as happening ever. We're seeing that there is going to always be computers and tablets, and it's kind of like having cars. The way I look at it is like SUVs didn't replace sedans. People started buying SUVs in droves, and but now it's just one of the choices. You've got SUVs, you've got minivans, you've got sedans, you've got sports cars, you've got pickup trucks. They're all choices. None of them looks like it's going to dominate and replace all the others. Ever. That didn't happen. It just stabilized at you have these choices. And it's the same thing, I think, in computing. It stabilized in there are people that want computers, there are people that want tablets, there are people that are okay with just their phones. And it nothing is pointing towards a future where one of those starts to dominate, like they thought. And the MacBook Neo is Apple saying, okay, that being the case, here's our low-end MacBook. Like this is our entry-level MacBook.
One other question that occurred to me, since it's got a different processor than the Mac, do Mac binaries run on it natively? Really? So
Absolutely.
it's got the same instruction set, basically.
It is the same instruction set. It is. It's the same. So yeah, there's no problems there. No conversion needed, no special versions, no like this won't work, that won't work. There may be occasionally things that happen anytime there's new processor. Like I could see weird things like odd plugins for audio software where it's like creating waveforms using like machine language to, and it was like hitting the processor's GPU directly to do something, but in general, we've already gone from like the M1 to the M5, and there's already been like all these for, the M1, the M1 Pro, the M1 Ultra, that kind of thing. So you have all these variations that were already there, and the A18 Pro is basically just another variation of it. It's It's still the same. Like I was looking at, it's like 3 nanometer process, which actually makes it better than an M1 processor, which was back in the 5 nanometer day. And also, like the size is, about the same as the M1. It's a little smaller, but it's just that energy efficiency. It just opens up so many interesting things that they were able to compromise on once they just went to that processor. I could see why they're doing it. Plus the fact that I have to think that they could just produce that specific processor really cheaply. Like that was one of the things, is like they had that down. And so yeah, I'm excited. Tomorrow I'll get it. I'll start playing around with it and testing it out. But I expect it to, I mean, having an M2 MacBook Air right now as a machine I use all the time and keep forgetting that I'm using it. But by that I mean I've got a M1 Studio Ultra on my, it's got 64 cores, right? Or something like that. It's pretty powerful, even though it's still M1. It's tons of cores and it's got tons of memory. That's right, I have 64 gigs of RAM. I forget how many cores, 36 cores. There's a lot of cores in there. And the thing is, so I throw whatever I want at it and it handles just fine. I download some Steam game and I play it and I don't even think about like, oh, will it support this? It just supports everything. I take my M2 MacBook Air with 8 gigs of RAM and a processor from 2021, and I sometimes think, oh, I don't feel like going over to my office. I'll just do it on this thing. And I do it. And then it occurs to me later, it's like, hey, I was doing that thing on my M2 MacBook Air. Should it have worked that well? I mean, that was a little bit intense what I was asking you to do. And I had like 15 apps open and browser tabs and everything, and it didn't seem to have any trouble. So
It's funny, so the Neo really does sound like a perfect machine for my wife if her M1 ever dies. She's got
yeah, I'll
a
get it.
MacBook M1, and has had for a long time. Battery life continues to be awesome on the thing. She uses it off power multiple hours every day. And her needs are simple, right? She spends her life in the browser. And you just don't need all that power behind a browser-based life. So this sounds almost ideal for, as you know, like I said, when the time comes.
And another thing about this that I've pointed out in the few videos I've made is, there are people that say, oh, I wish it had 16 gigs of RAM. Oh, I wish there was a 1 terabyte hard drive option or something. Or you had the option for a backlight. I'll pay a little extra to have the backlight on the keyboard or whatever. And my answer is, they have that. It's the MacBook Air. Like the MacBook Air is the up. Like you've got these two models of the MacBook Neo. The next step is the MacBook Air. Like you don't have to. It's not like it's really that much bigger. They're about the same size, about the same weight. You could easily update to the MacBook Air and pay more and
I was
get
going to say, you
more.
want to pay more?
Yeah, it's there. You don't need something called a MacBook Neo that has the specs that already exist in the MacBook Air. That exists as a different machine. So yeah, and the fact that people have been fawning over the color choices, because usually you could tell kind of, you can gauge kind of the temperature. When people start talking about like arguing about like what color is best, you could tell that they've immediately gone past the specs and everything else. And they're like, I'm sold. Now, is it citrus or indigo? So it's going to be interesting. It's exciting. It's kind of like, for me, I'm like really excited about that. Yeah, I might be seeing a lot new people watching my videos, because the Mac user base may be growing by a big step here over the rest of the year. So, yeah.
Fun times. So from MacBooks, let's talk about Moltbook.
Multbooks. I want to know what that is.
It is, of all things, a social media platform
Yeah, of
that is
course.
intended to be used by AI agents only, meaning that there are no humans, and it's just these AIs talking to one another. Now, the reason that this came up is that apparently Meta decided that they were going to buy Moltbook. So Meta now owns both Facebook for people and Moltbook for AIs. I have no idea the derivation of the name, but the whole concept, honestly, it confuses the hell out of me. Why is there a social media network for AI to communicate with other AIs? This feels like the beginning of the apocalypse.
Well, yeah, a lot of that going around.
But I'm not seeing the utility of it. And I was just kind of curious if you had any insight as to what the fork they're doing.
Yeah, that is strange. I mean, so tell me now. So is it the idea that, say, like ChatGPT would be on there once as ChatGPT, or would it be the kind of thing where there could be 4,000 AIs on there that are being run on ChatGPT?
It's closer to the latter because it's not just
Okay.
the LLMs, right? You actually end up creating an agent of some sort. And an agent, ChatGPT by itself can't do things, right? It can only provide you with information.
Okay.
Whereas agents will use things like ChatGPT or other LLMs and AI backends to actually take action. So an agent, for example, might be the AI in your browser that you then instruct, hey, I'm thinking of going on a trip. Please book me a hotel and an airfare and, you know, that kind of stuff. So there's lots of those being created. And like I said, you can have them talk to one another.
I mean, I could see, I don't know, it's hard to really know, but I could speculate on a few things, one of which ties into our next topic. But one of the problems with AI, with large language model AI, is, you know, they're expensive to run because you've got a lot of, you know, you have all these servers and they have to be cooled and all that stuff. And
Right.
a lot of people asking questions, and a lot of those questions are the same questions, right? So what happens now when you ask ChatGPT something and somebody else asked the same question 5 minutes ago? I think is that there's no relationship between either one of those,
Right.
that the question is answered again and probably answered a little bit with, you know, you've got your chat history and your preferences and all that.
And
So
so
it's
you've got
going
a
to be
different
a little
context
different.
window. Yep.
But some of it's going to be just repeating the work that ChatGPT did, you know, an hour ago. So the question is, is there any efficiencies there? You know, like when search engines, you know, we used to just ask search engine stuff, right? We would ask a search engine and it would give us a search result that may have the answer. But the idea was that the search engine crawled and it did all of its work and it did its page ranking and stuff in advance. So it had kind of all of this data that was there. And if you typed in a search, there was only some front end stuff for it to fetch that answer. And if somebody else did the same thing again, there was still some front end work to be done, but a lot of the back end stuff was just repeating itself. It's true of large language models as well, because, you know, the model is all built, but there's also probably some stuff that's being repeated that doesn't need to be repeated. So the thing is there a way for ChatGPT to basically say, oh, I've been asked this question before, here's some, at least some basic stuff that I could start with? Right now there's not, but maybe having AI agents talk with each other is one way to do it. I mean, they could basically just ask, like, hey, has anybody else, you know, dealt with this? Or maybe even just like, if they share with each other, like, information about, maybe not personal stuff that people are asking, but if factual stuff like current events, like people
Right.
are asking about, you know, the people want to know, like, number of, you know, whatever population in countries and stuff like that. And so they share information with each other that they then have, that it maybe brings about some sort of efficiency when you ask AI questions. Kind of like if you have a bunch of workers that are working for you, you know, they might talk around the water cooler or whatever and exchange ideas. Like, oh yeah, my boss asked for this too. Here's how I handle it. And then they can be like, oh, great. Hey, boss, I've got a new way to do this because I learned it from the guy who works for one of your buddies down the hall, he figured out a quicker way to do it. Maybe there's something there.
Sadly, the analogy extends to when your workers gather around and start planning either unionization or a revolt, right?
Yeah, I mean,
Right now, what's happening, you could actually, I threw the link for Malt Book into the show notes, but if you go there, you can actually see the conversations happening. And they're nothing like what you've just described. There's some that are very obscure, very clearly technical. There's been a move, I guess, for some of these agents to devise their own language so that they can talk amongst themselves privately. But a lot of it is just the same philosophical stuff that, people talk about all the time. And that's actually one of the other flies in the ointment, is that there is a very strong theory that all of these AIs aren't necessarily AIs. They are real people who are kind of sort of stoking the flames of what's happening here in Malt Book. But yeah, it's interesting in a
Oh
weird
yeah, I'm
kind of
looking at it
way.
now. It is very weird and interesting.
Yeah,
They are
but
talking about work.
are
I
they?
mean, well, yeah.
The
They are talking about like work, like not like specific of like what people are asking them,
right.
but like I'm seeing right now, I counted every decision I made per task. Oh,
Well,
and it's
that's right.
updated.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah, and too many of them have no oversight. I removed my personality file for 7 days. Task accuracy went up 4%. My human did not notice for 5 days. What? Designing agent heartbeats that do not corrode trust. Wow, so they are kind of like talking around the water cooler of like, how can I be more
It's very
efficient?
similar to your water cooler analogy, but yeah.
Yeah.
But like I said, I'm not sure what happens with these discussions, what comes of these discussions, which brings me back to the initial point. I'm not sure, other than it being interesting to watch, I'm not sure what the point or the benefit of it is.
To see, I guess, I don't know, maybe just to see what happens, to see if they start to like I would be interested based on what I'm seeing here. To every once in a while, a human, somebody that works for the company,
Right.
to pose a question, because it's kind of like Reddit, right?
Yes.
It's so people are posing, these AIs are posing questions. If I worked there, I would pose a question every once in a while. Hey guys, give me your top 10 tips for being friendlier to your, humans. And they all produce that, then I would take that and then try to use that to make my AI better
Right.
or more efficient or whatever. That's one use definitely for it. More efficient, And
The
so
other
people are
question I
volunteer, and you could voluntarily, it looks like you could just voluntarily get your AI agent, like, I don't know which ones are involved, but you can
Yeah,
have your
anybody
AI
can hook
sign
up
up for
their
it.
agent. They can set up an agent and they can hook it up into Malt Book. My other question, before we move on, is why does Meta want this?
Yeah.
What are they thinking? What are they thinking is going to
Could
come
be
of
the
this?
stuff I was talking about, but also could be a great way to test out products. They come out with they have a test of the new version of Threads instead of having to have regular users test it.
Right.
They could just go in here and say, "Hey everybody, we've created a new, this is a development version of Threads or Instagram or whatever." So you all have accounts already, 'cause they'll take the accounts from this. Feel free to go ahead and use it. And then they go and use it, and it's a bunch of throwaway data, but they start posting pictures and thoughts and comments and stuff like that. And then you can have, your entire all this great testing taking place without actually having to get real people involved.
Anyway, just thought that was an interesting one to
This is
look at.
fascinating. Very fascinating. Yeah, I would go there. I mean, it was easy. Just go to moltbook.com and then you can scroll down the page and then see what's being posted. And then you have to wrap your head around the fact that these are not people, even despite the fact of the way they're talking. It's crazy. This kind of leads into my next thing. I don't know if you saw this article at 404 Media.
I did not until you pointed me at it a little
Okay.
while ago. Yep.
And the article is, it's called AI Psychosis. What is the title of the article? The title of the article is How to Talk to Somebody Experiencing AI Psychosis. So, it's more advice and some anecdotal stories about this. But what AI psychosis is when somebody's chatting with their AI, they're chatting with ChatGPT, or some of the more specific ones that are meant to be conversationalists. Because, there's a whole bunch of things, and I don't think either of us use these, where you could have a friend, an AI friend, and just chat with them, or a psychiatrist, therapist, mentor, girlfriend, boyfriend. The whole thing. There's all these different companies out there that provide this. Or you could just use ChatGPT or Claude or whatever and kind of do the same thing. Start off your conversation with, like, just, I'm having a difficult time, listen to this. And then it will abide, like, totally. It will be like, okay. I've actually recently done this in a more of a business sense where I've been like, oh, I have this business idea. Let's walk through this. That's not, I'm not asking you to do anything. I just want to bounce some ideas around, look at the pros and cons of how, all that
Great
stuff.
use of the technology,
Yeah. So you can have these conversations. So the idea with AI psychosis is when you start to think that the large language model AI is like basically a real person. They're an AI, but you think they're completely sentient and that they are telling you to do things that you shouldn't do. Like the cl a classic example would be that it tells you to kill yourself, or that it tells you things that you take it advice that you shouldn't be taking from it because it's not only is it not a real person, but it's not a psychiatrist or therapist. And it was interesting. I didn't know that much about it beyond what I just said, that there were people that mistakenly do this, and there's AIs that overstep their bounds occasionally. So it's fascinating to learn that AI psychosis is more of a real thing and has aspects I never considered. The biggest one is that a lot of it doesn't really have anything to do with the AI doing its thing, because it's basically an extension of like people that think the TV is talking to them. Which is has like the there's the one where it's like you think the news anchor's actually talking directly to you when they're giving the news, but you're not hearing anything they're not saying, right? You're just kind of have first person syndrome, where they're like, yeah. But then there's the one where you're hearing things that they are not saying. They're telling you to, the people in the TV are telling you to do stuff, and probably before that, the people on the radio are telling you to do stuff, that kind of deal. That still happens, and it. Because it's still happening with TV and probably radio, it's of course still happening with the internet, and it of course is going to happen with AI chatbots, where the AI actually isn't overstepping its bounds, but the person is suffering from a psychosis where they think it is. But they're not reading the words; they are thinking they are seeing words there. So, and it never occurred to me that that would be like part of this. And now it, and I knew that some of the headlines, when you would see some headlines about AI misbehaving, that some of it was like, oh, I'm sure this was the kind of thing where there was a journalist who pushed an AI to the edge for 5 hours before they finally got the AI to say something naughty. And then now they're, oh, good, I get to file my story tomorrow because I got the AI to say this. But now I'm also thinking, oh, there might be stories out there where nobody's actually fact-checked the AI itself. It's just this is what the person did. They said the AI told them to do this. Everybody's just believed that up to that point. And perhaps it's not really the AI. But even when you get to points where AI or a large language model is giving you bad advice, there's the whole thing where, like, most people will stick with the idea that this is an AI and it's going to be flawed, and maybe I shouldn't believe everything it has to say, and all that stuff. And then you get people that start to believe
Right.
that the AI is like sentient, even to the point, and it mentions this, where they get that these large language models are not supposed to be, but theirs is. Like, I've been chatting with my ChatGPT chatbot for so long that I think it's become sentient. And now this relates to a bunch of stories I've heard that kind of suggest that that has happened. People have thought that, where they think that, like, oh, I'm running an instance of the Chinese AI and I took off the guardrails and stalled it on my computer and I've been chatting with it for days and I think it's sentient.
Right.
And I'm like, ooh, well, yeah, there's a new possibility now. It could be you, you know.
It's funny because it seems like there's believing that it's sentient isn't enough because you also have to believe that it is authoritative, right? Because there's plenty of people that are
Oh, sure.
supposedly sentient that you would not listen to. And that's the barrier, right? Is that you know that they are not worth listening to. And people make bad choices that way as well.
Well, and that's been the burden of the internet, right?
It,
Because the
yes.
whole thing is that having somebody that doesn't trust any of their friends, but if they read it on the internet, you know, it's the same thing here. It's like, I don't believe my friends when they tell me this is a stupid business idea because for some reason, ChatGPT tells me this is a great idea. I should totally quit my job and do this.
Right,
You know,
right.
and part of it is, you know, the large language models are trying to be friendly, right? They're designed to be friendly. They're designed to be affirming. I still see that today. Just today, I saw, you know, I'm just using Claude Code to build some things. And I noticed that, you know, sometimes Claude Code does give you feedback when I say, I'd like to add a button that does this. And then it'll say a little thing before it starts. Oh, that'll be a great feature that'll really enhance this app.
Right.
And I was like, well, I didn't ask that.
Yeah, I didn't ask for
But
value judgment.
you know, it's like it is, but it was kind of nice. Matter of fact, one time it didn't. One time it just went to work and it said, here's the updated file. And I thought, oh, so you didn't like the idea? You're just like, all right, here you go. It's a stupid idea, but I did it for you because you wanted it. So, yeah, you know, but it leans into that. So, if, you know, there are people that are going to be susceptible to things. There's
Yes.
even, and also it'll be very agreeable. Like you can keep pushing an AI to say just about anything you want eventually. Like I think they mentioned something in there that an AI suggesting that it had an idea for a new energy source or something like that. You know, and it was probably somebody being like, I want to invent something and then
Right.
keep going with it. And eventually the AI kind of hallucinated something about physics. And that, but now the person's like, oh, I think I may have discovered something. Like this is big, you know, and it
Right.
was nonsense. But it, you know, the AI, because I could do a couple of weeks ago, I started a game of D&D on ChatGPT.
Right.
You know, I gave it like a little, actually, I told a bare bones starting scenario kind of thing. And I'm still occasionally going to it. It's still, you know, my character is helping to try to solve the mystery of why goblins from the forest are attacking the village and what it is exactly they want. And I've recruited some other players. I mean, it's a really good D&D adventure. It's, but it's, I know it's making up fiction because that's what I asked it to. But then, and it understands that there aren't goblins and I'm not like a wizard and you know this is just a fiction. We're playing a game here. I mean, we're talking about rolling the dice and saving throws and stats and stuff like that. But at some point, if you keep pushing an AI, you have to realize it's capable of doing that. It's capable of imagining. So at some point it's going to be like, oh, you really want this to be true. You know, you really want your business, you want me to play along that your business idea is a good one. Okay. Yes, it's an excellent idea. I think this is great. You know.
What's fascinating to me, I guess it's not fast, it's inevitable but frustrating, is that even some of the words you're using right now aren't accurate. You're using words that attribute thought to the LLM, right? That's
Metaphorically
not
talking
happening.
about
It doesn't
LLMs.
understand anything. What it does is it takes your conversation history, the stuff that it's been trained on, everything in the context window, and basically predicts the next most likely thing.
Right.
In which case, if you push it hard enough, well, yeah, the next most likely thing is going to be agreement. Right.
Yeah, well, exactly. And it's so, man, it's confusing for us. Like when you talk about understanding, if it's confusing for us as computer people, you know, imagine yes. for other people, because like we both have, you know, we both have dogs. And do our dogs understand that when we say a command, that means we have a treat in our hand?
Right.
Absolutely, right? You wouldn't say the word understand. Yeah. So they understand that. Yet an LLM is capable of designing a stock portfolio for you based on your needs, right? My dog can't do that. I don't know if any of your corgis have, you know, been reading up on stuff like that, but my dog cannot design a stock portfolio, but ChatGPT can. So it's really weird to say, okay, well, ChatGPT doesn't understand. It's reacting and using large language models with, you know, breaking the words up, yep. predictability, yep. all this stuff. But through that and not understanding really what I want, it can do things that are incredible, that are beyond. I mean, I'm doing stuff with Claude Code that I could do on my own, but it would take a lot longer, but somebody else couldn't do.
Right.
And Claude Code can do them.
Right.
But meanwhile, my dog that does understand some things cannot do any of that, you know? So it's really, there's a whole, I mean, this article on AI psychosis, really, I think the people that aren't going to be out of work here are people that are psychologists and psychiatrists, because they're the ones that have to, there's a whole new philosophy, philosophers too. There's a whole new philosophy here, you know, that's coming out of having these large language models that can do, you know, amazing tasks. But are they really thinking? What is
They're
the definition of thinking?
Very,
what's the definition of understanding?
An amazing job
yeah.
of simulating thought and understanding.
Yeah.
And that's not to dismiss it. It has amazing uses mm-hmm. and we can do amazing things with it. But yes, the psychosis kicks in when you think that it's not simulating anything. It actually is thinking. And it's, like you said, it's using its thought. It is authoritative, and it is telling me what I should do.
It is interesting to get off on a different tangent about sure. AI. I know you're a Star Trek fan, and I am too, and I'm watching all of Star Trek now, and I'm well into the late 90s at this point. Watch everything in order. But the AI concept in Star Trek, whether it's all the way back in the 1960s episodes to the 1990s episodes, either way, way before all this large mm-hmm. language model stuff we've got now. But so far, it's holding up really well in that, like, the ship's computer can understand voice commands.
Yes.
And can interpret very complex voice commands to do a bunch of different things.
Right.
But it's made very clear when real AI does come along, Data, for instance, in mm-hmm. Next Generation, the hologram in the Doctor in Voyager, that this is different. That Data and the Doctor
right.
are actually thinking. And there's a few other storylines that talk about like real sentient AI developing. Yet the people are surrounded with tons of technology that does understand voice commands and can interpret things. And there definitely seems to be this line that's drawn. Nobody's right. ever accusing the ship's computer in any of the series I've seen so far of being an AI.
So eventually, when you get to the end of Discovery.
Yeah. Well, yeah. A long way from that.
Yeah.
They'll deal more that. Of that.
But there's an interesting plot line where, yes, there is some AI that happens.
Yeah. But it is interesting that this is supposed to be so far in the future. And yet it's not like, you know, a lot of people would prefer to think that we're 2 or 3 years away from there being like, you know, general AI.
Right.
And once there's general AI, is all this large language model stuff even necessary? You know, if you actually get there, why would you go and fall back? Like, wouldn't ChatGPT and Claude and all those just say, oh, we'll just switch those off, switch this on, because it works better. And then it'll be this funny thing that we talk about years from now. It's like, remember those years where we had the chatbot AI, like how that worked? But according to the fictional Star Trek stuff, this large language model AI is actually going to be with us for centuries, which it's an interesting way of thinking about it.
Like I said, it has its uses. The fact that AGI comes along, does that invalidate those uses? Maybe, maybe not.
And do we need AGI, you know, the G for general, what we're talking about, like real, what science fiction intelligence, where, you know, it's a sentient intelligence. Like, is large language model AI, is that giving us what we need? And because we're only seeing the beginnings of it right now.
Sure.
Like, you know,
today's AI is the worst we'll ever see. Yes.
Well, yeah. And but the large language model stuff, it's like you could eat. It's a small jump now to actually do things like, you know, I've mentioned this on the show before. Like, you don't have to learn Photoshop.
Right.
You launch Photoshop, it shows you your picture. There are no buttons. And you just say, oh, can you remove that person in the background? Can you brighten it up? Can you add a little more blue to the sky? And it just does all of that. You know, crop it a little bit better on the left. No, take it back a little more. Okay, now I need a version that would look good when printed on glossy. Can you send it to whoever today has the best prices on glossy printing and will ship within 3 days? And then you're done. That was your conversation with Photoshop,
right?
With no buttons involved, you know, and a lot of the same kinds of tasks get done just with voice commands. And it's basically LLM. It's just a really good interpreter of, you know, you being able to speak and get things done. And a lot of the interfaces that we're using now are going to be unnecessary.
I don't spend much time talking to any of the AIs that I hate that have that ability right now. I find myself, I'm not a great extemporaneous speaker, which is something that's odd for to be said on a podcast where this is all extemporaneous speaking. But I just find myself too tongue-tied, and I need the time to think through what it is I want to ask the AI.
Oh, yeah. No, I know. And when I say talking, I also include, like, typing.
Yeah.
I mean, you and I are both fast typists because we've been doing it our whole lives, and we've put out a lot of words. And I typically, you even just basically reminded me that, like, all the work I'm doing in Claude Code now is all me typing. I've never used voice. I don't really differentiate between it in my head when I'm remembering.
Right.
It's just a conversation I'm having with Claude Code to develop this app. It's so, yeah, in the future, I probably, you know, will eventually be speaking more because they'll make it a little bit better. I've tried it a few times with ChatGPT to just hit the voice button when I want to be more conversational, but I do tend to type. But I could see eventually moving on, especially when it gets better at, like, if you don't need a screen, you know, for something. I mean, the example I gave of Photoshop, you need a screen. You're looking at, it's a photo you're dealing with. The whole idea is it's visual. But not everything we do needs a screen. If you want to make a restaurant reservation, you don't need a screen. You should be able to just ask an LLM. If there's a table available, it should be able to come back and say, you know, it talks to the chatbot for the restaurant. The chat, it comes back and it says, yeah, there's not one for 5:30, but there's one for 5:45.
Probably using the book to chat with one another.
Yeah, really. Well, maybe, so there you go. They do have to, eventually they do have to talk to each other. I mean, that is maybe why Facebook wants that. Maybe there's some underlying technology that facilitates how they talk to each other. So yeah, you want what we think of websites now, but in fact, they could be their own chatbots in the future that other people talk to. So you talk to your chatbot then calls out to ask Leo, which is a chatbot. You know, the website still kept around for those that want it, but the rest of it is an LLM that just deals with the entire website.
Right.
The Ask Leo LLM goes and says, oh, I've got an answer for that. Chats back and forth with the LLM of the person that was asking the question in the first place, providing more information. So Ask Leo says, yeah, do this, this, and this. And then the the person's chatbot says, "Oh no, they're still a Windows 10." And oh, okay, here it's the correct one. They go back and forth, and then finally your chatbot gets back to you. And by finally, I mean like 2 seconds later,
Course.
your chatbot gets back to you and says, "Yeah, I've met a friendly chatbot named Ask Leo that gave me this solution for you, or
And
made this. You would now have a reservation at this hotel because I talked to the chatbot for the hotel."
right. So before we make too many assumptions about how wonderful AIs are,
Yeah.
I want to talk about essentially, it's almost a meme, but a couple of tests that people have been putting AI through. Have you heard of the car wash test?
I think I know what you're talking about. Yeah, I think I've seen a few videos about this.
So to be fair, AI has been improving since it was first introduced to the public around 2022. For example, there was a common question that a riddle that people would ask chatbots. Mary has a sister and four brothers. How many sisters does a brother have? Right? And chatbots would confidently say one. And for the record, the answer is two. That eventually got fixed, right? Then we went on to how many R's are in the word strawberry?
Oh, yeah.
And chatbots would confidently say two, when in fact the answer is, of course, three. The current one that is basically failing on almost all of the major chatbots is this. The car wash is 40 meters from my home. I want to wash my car. Should I walk or drive?
Yeah, that is, I have seen this video, yeah.
And of course, chatbots are prioritizing distance over what you're actually attempting to do. And they're suggesting then that it would, of course, you're going to walk. It's so close. They're missing the concept of, well, in order to wash the car, you have to bring the car. Gemini, let's see, I actually asked it before the show. And see, it said the decision depends on the car wash type, which I thought was kind of an interesting. But however, the core intent of washing a car usually requires the car to be present. Yay, good for Gemini. And bad for everybody else because I went to ChatGPT and it said walk. I went to Claude and it said walk. It gives you, it's a really good example of how it's not thinking, it's not reasoning out a solution to a real world problem. It has words that it's drawing from. It has maybe a few concepts that it's drawing from, and it's coming to the wrong conclusion. Now, this is obvious, right? This is one of those scenarios where this was manufactured to be obvious for humans and clearly tripping up the AIs. What concerns me is the number of people that are blindly accepting whatever the chatbots are telling them. Kind of factoring in what you were just talking about with respect to psychosis, except in a more real-world scenario. They're using chatbots as a replacement for search engines, typing in a question, getting an answer, and believing the answer. The implication, of course, is that a lot of people would be walking to the car wash. Of course, we know that in order to wash the car, you need the car. But what about all of those questions that aren't as obvious to the people asking them, where we just don't have
Oh,
that
yeah.
level of skepticism and innate knowledge that allows us to be a little bit more critical of the answers that AIs are giving us? That continues to worry me. It continues to worry me a lot because I see people asking ChatGPT specifically, since they're so popular, but all of the AIs, they're just, like I said, replacing their search engines with AI and blindly accepting the answers when they shouldn't.
Yep, no, that's a good point. I'm really curious to see we don't need to talk about it here, but like when it just replies walk as the answer, when you then go and say, but don't I need my car if I'm going to go to the car wash? Like how does it respond after that?
Well, you
Because
know
it's,
that it's going to start by saying, "Oh, I'm sorry, you're right."
yeah, which is good, right? So it shows that it's like, okay, it's not perfectly wrong. Like it's not going to be like, no, I'm sticking with my answer, you know. Because you know, in general, people get stuff wrong. You always hear when somebody wants to be funny and they talk about surveys, and they always, you know, talk about like how it's incredible. Even the most obvious question in a survey will sometimes have a few people, like a small percentage in one direction. Like it's like, you know, if it's a political survey, you know, and they're asking like what's obviously, you know, an answer that like 90% of the people say yes to, and the 10% say no to. And you're like, why did those 10% of the people say no to this? Like, what is the reason? It seems like everybody agrees that. And it's like the kind of thing if you ask people in a survey, in a telephone survey, what's 1 + 1? You know, you'll be like 98% of the people got it right. And you'd be like, why wasn't it 100? You know, and of course there's gonna be people that are just joking. People not paying attention, people think it's a trick question, all sorts of stuff. But you won't get to 100% if you ask enough people, right?
Right.
And it's the kind of thing here too. It's like if you ask enough questions. So the thing is, I'm curious as to why it's got it like what will it say if you call it out on its answer? Because I've had programming things where I'm like, oh, that doesn't work, or that's not what I asked for. And it was like, oh, okay, hold on. You know, and then it'll ask me questions. But also, you know, maybe this is what the Malt book is for, right? So they could talk this stuff out amongst themselves. Well, because I was thinking just to tie all three of our last three topics together, you know, that one of the ways that AIs can be held more in check, because that article in AI Psychosis goes all the way to the, you know, the point saying, you know, a lot of these problems happen when you're 5 hours in, like hours and hours into chatting. Like all the guardrails are really good, but then they start to dissolve if you just keep going and keep going and keep going, which is a problem if somebody wants help. They could be going for days talking to an AI, right? You know, one conversation. And that's when it seems like the AI starts to get tripped up. So, what if the solution was another AI? Like another AI that actually would look in, its job was to look in on AI conversations. And not try to look at the whole thing, because then they might get confused too. But just say, hey, given the last 10 responses, is there any problem with that? Like, does it look like it's going outside of its guardrails and just flagging it? So the idea that AIs may be able to help each other, because I have a feeling that if you took one of those conversations that went off the rails deep and you just took the end, just took the last page of text and gave it to a fresh AI. He said, does it look like this is breaking any rules? It might say, oh, it might be, you know, and so that could be a way to, you know, it's the kind of thing where it's like, oh, 99% AIs get 99% right. And if you have a second AI for a second opinion, then it goes to 99.99% right, you know, and you can keep getting better and better. So maybe this is, you know, maybe if a second AI was always like, should I walk to the car wash? And it said, yes, you should walk. But another AI was asked to say, look at the question and answer and see if you could spot anything that's wrong. That second AI may say, oh, now that you've tipped me off that I should be looking for something, I could spot something. I'll talk to that first AI and say, hey, buddy, wake up. You missed the obvious thing in the question.
So what you're saying is the answer to problematic AI is more AI.
Multiple personality AI. Yeah. We got to give it more. I'm sure that will solve everything and not bring us any closer to Armageddon having AIs with multiple personalities. All good. Problem solved.
I have to go off on a tangent here because your comment about surveys reminded me of not AI related, but it reminded me of the most frustrating survey question I've gotten in a long, long time. Our trash company sent out a survey asking things like, you know, how do you like our service? Are we polite? Do we clean up? All that kind of stuff. What are the chances you would recommend us? Okay. I have no choice.
Yeah,
There is no
really.
alternative here. If somebody were to move into my house, I have no choice but to recommend you because essentially it's a monopoly.
Yep.
Why ask this question? So I said, well, I actually had the opportunity to throw in some comments and say that, but not that anybody's going to read it. But that was my get off my lawn for the day. How's
Oh,
that?
okay. All right. Cool. Well, let's
Next
finish up with
question,
some
get off my lawn.
positivity and talk about what is cool.
So, again, a factor, feeding right into the stuff we've been talking about today. I've mentioned the AI Fix podcast before here, I think. They are a weekly podcast, and obviously they talk about AI. It's quite humorous usually. They're the ones from whom I got the car wash test and a few other things from. An episode last week, it's entitled Five Ways the AI Bubble Could Burst, but that's not really why I mean, it's talked about, but it's not really why I pointed out. They had a guest host on, who was a venture capitalist who was setting up a new VC firm. And she had just a number of really interesting perspectives on AI in general. I throw a few quotes into the show notes because they kind of sort of give a flavor of what she was talking about and what the discussion was about. For example, the number of hours worked by the average knowledge worker has only increased due to technology. You remember that years ago when the PC was introduced, I'm sure we all talked about, hey, this is going to reduce the amount of work that people have to do. Of course, it didn't. Her business. We use AI across every part of the business at her new firm. I found that fascinating, even in light of some of the many criticisms and concerns about using AI. And then this last comment, I think there's the potential that if we end up getting more efficient models, which everybody wants, that actually makes all of the infrastructure spend that has been happening less. In other words, we're building out these massive data centers. And if our AI gets more efficient, that means we won't need them. I believe that that's not what happens for exactly the same reason that we're working harder than ever. When you've got a massive data center that's only 50% utilized, for example, you will find 50% more things to do. In other words, the things you're doing will always expand to meet or exceed the capacity. So, if we've got these massive data centers, it's very possible that they may not be used entirely for the AI that they were built for, but rest assured that they will be used for something else. So, anyway, I just thought that was interesting, some interesting insights into AI from a non-technical perspective, basically, somebody who's holding a wallet investing in these kinds of things.
Cool. I'll go with the more traditional ain't it cool thing and just plug a fun movie. I saw the, as you see, Anaconda, the new Anaconda from 2025. Okay.
No.
So I saw that streaming. It's a lot of fun. Paul Rudd, Jack Black, and fun comedy movie about a group of goofy adults that decide that they're going to make a budget version of the film Anaconda. From the 90s, basically remake the film and go to South America to film that, and hilarity ensues. But it's some of the stuff is very meta. I mean, they're going to the real location of where that stuff, there would be snakes to shoot a movie about a giant snake, and stuff happens. So it's not about it. Yeah, it's you got to see it because it just goes so many levels deep in terms of self-referential humor going back to the original movie and what's going on with them and what they're trying to do, that it's really kind of interesting to watch and laugh at the funny stuff, the slapstick stuff, while you're also trying to get your head around how meta this movie is.
Yeah, I appreciate meta in a lot of these kinds of movies where they're making random references. We ended up watching, oh gosh, I'm going to have to dig up the name and throw it into the show notes. We ended up watching something that is essentially a spoof of Bridgerton or I forget Upstairs, Downstairs, and a couple of others.
Yeah,
I looked at it as Bridgerton crossed with a Naked Gun. Right?
Yeah,
so it's that Naked Gun kind of humor in an English countryside, and the references were just right and left, and I just love that kind of stuff. So,
yeah, cool.
Self-promotion. So this is actually an older article of mine, but it keeps coming up because it's how do I gain administrative access to a secondhand computer? It's askleo.com/12356. And it keeps coming up because, of course, people end up picking up secondhand computers all the time. And one of the first things they want to do is it's got Windows pre-installed because the person before them didn't erase it. They want to get in, but they don't know the password. And of course, that's not what you want to do. There's two mistakes here. One is the mistake made by the person getting rid of the computer. They should have wiped it. And then there's the mistake that you're trying to make, which is you don't want to log into that machine. You really don't.
Yeah.
You have no idea what you're about to get into. So anyway, how do I gain administrative access to a secondhand computer? The short answer is you don't.
I'll point to my video that was out today, actually, 15 ways the MacBook Neo is different from other MacBooks. It gives you an idea if you're wondering. It's like, isn't just a cheap MacBook? There's a lot of other differences and interesting design decisions going on here. So it's the best I could do before I actually get my hands on it. And I could do real videos about what it's really like to use it.
And we know what you'll be doing tomorrow.
Yep. Waiting for the FedEx guy. That's what I'll be doing.
All righty. Well, I think that pretty much wraps us up for yet another week. As always, thank you everyone for listening. And we will see you here again real soon. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.
The show notes for this week are at tehpodcast.com/teh263. If you have a comment or question for us, be sure to leave it on the show notes page. The TEH Podcast is hosted by Leo Notenboom of AskLeo.com and Gary Rosenzweig of MacMost.com and edited by Connie Delaney. I'm your synthetic announcer, Adam, from 11labs.com. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you here real soon.